I invite you to turn to Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5 and 6. This summer I'm attempting to just look at some familiar passages, sometimes one verse. Like last Sunday, we looked at Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. So you look at Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, you'll recognize this: in all your ways, acknowledge him, and he'll make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes, fear the Lord, and shun evil. Well, back on October the 21st, 2016, Delaney and I were out on a date. That's not the last time that we went out on the town. We went to Outback. It was a Friday afternoon, about 5 o'clock. Outback was getting crowded, and we're accustomed to going to Outback around 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon when there's no one there. The hostess seated us in a booth next to a window, and we looked all around us. There's people everywhere. Then we looked at the table across us. There were 20 fifth graders at the next table. And you know how that is when you go in a restaurant and there's a baby screaming. When you sit down, you say, well, I hope they're almost through eating now, and they'll be leaving soon. So as we were whispering back and forth, we said, well, we may have to move to the other side of the restaurant. We're not going to be able to hear ourselves converse with each other. We looked a little closer, and all these little boys had on navy blue sport coats, white shirts, bow ties. And across their lapel, they were called the Gentlemen's Club. There were five adults at that table for 20 boys. But here's what we observed. Never one time did any of those children raise their voice. No one ever threw any food. You would have never known they were there. The five adults that were there were training them how to use their silverware. We were absolutely amazed. That was our entertainment for our date that night. When one of the adults got up and walked away from the table, I called him over to our table and I said, is this a football team? He says, no. These are some fifth graders that we are mentoring. They're all A and B students. He said, we try to teach them about character, integrity, honesty, and a work ethic. He said, tonight we're taking these boys to the Rome High School football game. And he said, after the game is over, these boys are going in and clean the locker room. We were just mega, mega impressed. Now, here's another thing he said. I said, what's the deal with the bow ties? And here's what he said. I wrote it down for you. He said, we teach them about pride and self-esteem. You are how you dress. And I want you to know something. These kids were dressed for success. As they left that night, they all came by our table and said goodbye to us one at a time. That gave us hope for five generations behind us. Today I want to share with you very simply a message about how to dress for success spiritually in every situation in your life. When you go back to verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. First of all, our priorities in verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. This whole passage of Scripture is about that key word, trust. Our God is utterly dependable. His character is perfect. That means it is impossible for God to lie to you and me. His wisdom is so great, he can never make a mistake. Our God can be trusted. He has high and holy purposes for us, and he has no impure motives behind it. I like what Pastor Preston Moore said. God will never let us go. He'll never let us down, and he'll never let us off. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That word trust comes from a Hebrew word that has a very simple meaning. It means to place your entire weight upon something or someone. For example, when you go to bed at night, I hope you have a mattress or mattress and box springs that you trust. When you lie down on the bed at night, you don't put one hand over here on the rail and one hand in the floor and the other part of your body in the bed. You just lay the entire weight of your body on your bed. And that's what he's talking about. He says, this is the way we ought to trust God. We just place our entire being and existence upon him. And we think about somebody who had to trust. We go to the Old Testament picture of Job. Here's a wealthy man. He has a wife. He has children, grandchildren. He has livestock, probably the wealthiest man in all the land. And all of a sudden, it's all gone. Suddenly, he's going to find out in whom he trusts. And you remember his friends came along beside him, and they were making some accusations. It must have been some kind of sin in your life. Then his wife came alongside and said, why don't you just curse God and die? He said, though he slays me, yet I will trust him. Now, if nobody else is listening, Sister Elaine and I are having a conversation here, okay? I love Sister Elaine. Sister Elaine, you got your tambourine with you today? Okay. So what he's saying about Job, he put the weight of his entire existence on God. Now notice, he says to trust the Lord with all your heart. Every day, I try to remember to tell my wife, not because it's a habit, I try to tell her every day, I love you with all my heart. Not a piece of it, not a portion, not 50%. I love you with all my heart. Notice what he says here. A half-hearted faith is the same thing as wholehearted doubt. He says, we're to trust the Lord with all our heart. Now listen, there's no such thing as half-hearted trust. Half-hearted trust is the same thing as no trust in God. Trust is important in any relationship. For example, I tell couples that one of the piers in the foundation that's so important upon which you build your marriage is trust. You don't want to be married to somebody that you don't trust. And every day with what we say, what we do with our spouse, or when we're apart from our spouse, we ought to be doing things that make a deposit in their trust bank. When I make a deposit in the bank, when I use my debit card, I know that's astounding to some of you, or I write a check, I expect the money to be there. Delaney knows that I have a policy. If a lady comes to see me here at the church, one of my secretaries will always be either in the office or in the office next to it with the door open. That's what they call babysitting the doctor. That's what our secretaries call that. But you know what? That builds trust with my wife. And I want you to know, when you've destroyed that trust, you have almost abolished your relationship. So in marriage, you've got to have trust. Now listen to me. There's a fictitious story about Adam and Eve. Adam woke up one morning. Boom. He discovered a woman. God had made a woman. What was God thinking? I'm not sure what he was thinking. And he gave us something men cannot understand. But anyway, he looked up, and there was Eve. He named her Eve. He was so excited. He was so lonesome. And so he had somebody to tell him what to do now, named Eve. I hear all the guys here, and I'm having chicken salad sandwich for lunch, so I can get on the edge here. So anyway, they rocked along there for a little while with their marriage, and Adam's having to work pretty late in the garden at night. He's coming in after dark, and so he comes in one day, and Eve says, you know, I'm not real happy with you. And Adam said, well, what's wrong? And he said, she said, I think you're stepping out on me a little bit. He said, Eve, that's crazy. You're the only woman on the face of the earth. And she still didn't believe him. Y'all ever encounter anything like that in your marriage? And so a few nights later, he was in a dead sleep. And all of a sudden, he felt something poking him in the side, and he woke up. He said, "Eve, what are you doing?" She said, "I'm counting your ribs." Some of you know what that means. Some of you don't. God can't make a mistake. Therefore, we should totally trust him. You know, when the terrorists snuffed out the life of Todd Beamer, September 11th, 2001, it wasn't the first time his wife, Lisa, had experienced a great loss. When she was 15 years old, her dad died suddenly. She was forced to deal with the grief process. Then September 11th, 2001, her husband was killed by a terroristic act. Here's what she said as she went through this grief process. Now listen carefully. She said, "Somewhere along the way, I stopped demanding that God fix the problems in my life and started to be thankful for his presence as I endured the trials of life." It's no wonder she became an icon of strength to the American people. First thing he says, trust. The second thing he says here, notice, lean not on your own understanding. The word there is the Hebrew word which means to support yourself by leaning on something or leaning on someone. We're not to be guided by just what we think. This doesn't mean that we're to be without understanding. It doesn't mean that we're to put our mind in neutral. It doesn't mean that we're not to use sanctified common sense. But it does mean that we are to, listen, to put holy revelation before human wisdom and understanding. There are a lot of things that happen to us that we don't understand. The timing of many things that happen to us, we can't comprehend. But we've got to remember that God's ways are not our ways, and our thoughts are not his thoughts. Now listen carefully. In verse 7, he says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." Jeremiah 10:23 says, "I know, Lord, that a person's life is not his own. No one is able to plan his own course." The New King James Version says, "It's not in man who walks to direct his own steps." Several years ago, I saw an article about a man who loved vintage planes. He had a 1946 prop plane. He was out flying it one day, had problems. So he radioed that he had an emergency, and he landed at an airport that was not his home base. He got out and worked on the engine, and he decided that he would just crank the plane by turning the propeller by hand. He didn't realize that he had left the plane what you and I would call in gear, and it was trimmed for landing. And when that engine fired, the plane began to move without anybody on board. Plane taxied down the runway, ascended to 2,000 feet and flew in circles until it crashed and burned. Nothing left. There was nobody on board to pilot the plane. When you and I don't lean on the Lord and his wisdom, we're going to make some bad decisions and crash our lives. You see, the things that we think are just so reasonable. You know, I think about David when he had to fight Goliath. You know, Saul looked at him and said, "Now, son, we're going to fit you in some armor." And so they brought that out. He tried it on. And, you know, I think he was a boy's size 14 about them. And they put extra large armor on him. Said, "Are you going to need this helmet and all these other things?" And David said, "You know, I don't think so. All God wants me to use is a sling and a few stones." And you know, people thought Noah was crazy to build a boat on dry land. And I'm sure they thought Joshua had lost his mind when God instructed him to tell the children of Israel to march around the walls of Jericho 7 times, and then the walls fell, he trusted, he was leaning on God, his power, his wisdom, and all those things kind of worked out, didn't they? So he says trust, he says lean, and then he talks about our path. Notice he says that we're to submit. Now I know a lot of people, when they hear that word submission in our society, in the political correct society we live in, they don't want to hear that. Well, God made us, and he wrote the instruction book. So let's see what he has to say. He says, in all your ways. Look at that. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Verse 6. Did you get the emphasis in that verse? He says, listen, that means your finances. That means your social life. That means your marriage. That means your parenting, your profession, your recreational life, your vocational life, your marital life. You are to acknowledge God. Now look at that word acknowledge. That means to recognize. That means to see. In all things, we're to be looking for God, looking for what he wants, what he desires, whether you're going to pray, whether you're going to work, whether you're going to worship, whether you're going on vacation or our vocation, acknowledge the Lord. Let me simplify that as much as I can. That simply means always keep God in mind. When we're looking through our eyes, we're keeping God in mind. How does God see this? You know, the Lord's helping me a little bit better as I look at people, not to be so judgmental, but try to look at them through the eyes of Christ and wonder, does this person here that I'm encountering, do they actually know the Lord? When you hear, keep the Lord in mind, you say, well, I watch certain movies and I see certain things on my laptop, my pad, my phone, my television, and they're very entertaining, but they have a lot of profanity there. Well, if you're hearing things through the ears of God, in Philippians chapter 4, we find the words, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are pure, and it goes on and on. Think on these things. Hear through the ears of God. Then when you're thinking about things, you want to think through the mind of God. See things from God's perspective. You know, somebody in our church, some precious people, sent a book to me while I was on vacation. And it's called Two Chairs. And I've been reading part of that book. And it encourages you every morning when you get up to sit down in one chair and have an empty chair over here, have your devotion and present all your cares and your problems to God, and take twice as long or 3 times as long to listen to what he says than the amount of time you're speaking in your prayers. There's a new concept for you. Be loving through your heart. Have the heart of God. Long for the heart of God as you see people. We're to acknowledge the Lord. Look for the Lord. Seek the Lord. Recognize what God wants to do through us. And then he talks about straight way. He says, if you'll do your part, God will do his part. Look at verse 6. And he shall direct your path. I want to remind you, this is a promise from God. But it's a conditional promise. Look at this carefully. He'll direct your paths if you're controlled by the plan of God and you're confident in the power of God and committed to the purpose of God, he'll direct your path. I'm absolutely horrible with directions. GPS for me is dangerous. I'm trying to keep my eye on my smartphone and trying to make the correct turns. Now, there's some little voice in there that says, turn right in 1,000 feet. It's always a female voice telling us what to do. Have y'all noticed that? It's even in the GPS. And so, you know, I missed that turn, and it says, make a U-turn legally immediately. And it just goes on and robots you to death. Delaine is my navigator. She's wonderful with the GPS. And when she's over by my side, I say, listen, You just look at that, you listen to that, and you tell me when I need to turn. Because we have been on some long enrichment tours when I have missed exits on the interstate. We were coming back from the Gulf last year, and we were supposed to come up through Columbus and get on 185. Not 85, but 185. And I forgot what she was doing at the time, and I got to the exit for 185, and I went the wrong way. We went for miles, and I got off. The next thing I knew, I was near the old bus station down in the middle of downtown Columbus. It's a restaurant. Just so happened I wasn't hungry. That's a great restaurant to go if you want to go there, but we didn't want to be there. It took, we lost about 45 minutes to an hour because I missed one stinking turn. Now listen to me carefully. He's speaking about guidance here. While the world just stumbles around in the dark, we're promised we can walk in the light. Write down Isaiah 58:11. The Lord will guide us continually. No break in it. Then he says in Psalm 32:8, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. I think the best illustration I know about God guiding with his eye is Patsy Roberts. Here in the choir. Patsy, just raise your hand in case some guests don't know you. I'm not going to embarrass you. But Delaney and I always admired how she and Jim raised Trevor and Austin. The children sat out here, and oftentimes they didn't have a parent with them, as Jim and Patsy were in the choir. And every now and then Austin and Trevor could start laughing and causing a little commotion out there. I really didn't pay attention to it. So Patsy always did this from the choir. She'd go. And man, as soon as they would connect with their eyes, all things would be peaceful and calm. Because Patsy Roberts believes in capital punishment, even with her own children. Not her grandchildren, but even with her own children. And I want you to know that their behavior was guided by her eyes. Notice what he says, I'll guide you just with a glance. You and I won't even know he's looking. He's looking at all times. Tremendous promise. He says, I'll lead you. I'll go before you. I'll pilot the plane of your life and make sure you reach your destination safely. Now I want you to write this down. Here's the three levels upon which we can think. Number one, write this down. I'm going to do what I want to do. It's my life, and I want you to know that's the way that most of the world's living today. That's the way many Christians are living today. Number two, write this down. I'll do what I think I ought to do. I'll do what I think I ought to do. And that's the level where many Christians live, but the highest level, I'll do what God leads me to do. He also directs our paths through godly counsel. Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. Again, in Proverbs 15:22, without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they're established. Divine guidance often comes through another person to us, or through a group of persons. Now listen, don't surround yourself with numerous counselors. Surround yourself with wise counselors. But this verse speaks of more than just guidance. Look, he uses the word direct. That means to cut a highway. It means to clear a path. It's even more exciting because let me tell you what this means. When God is leading and we're following, mountains will melt. Valleys will be filled, crooked places will be straightened, rough places will be smooth, and doors will be open. I had lunch with a pastor this week. He was discouraged. So we went to Stanley's for some soul food. He said, I don't really know my way around this restaurant. I said, well, the fried chicken is real good. So he got a big old chicken breast, and he got some black-eyed peas and some green beans, and I said, Do you like banana pudding? He said, well, I'm actually trying to stay away from sugar. His wife leads and manages a couple of branches of Weight Watchers. And I said, your wife's not here? She'll never know. And the other thing, she's not with you, so she won't be tempted to get off her diet. So he said, I'll have the banana pudding. So we sat there, and he could hardly talk for eating. And he got halfway through with his chicken breast, and he got off into the banana pudding. And I thought, I don't eat like that, but that's totally out of order. But we just kept talking. And so we got in the middle of the conversation. He said, I want you to know all the air conditioners are out in my worship center. And we were going to have to move this summer to another building. And he said, it's going to take over $100,000 to buy air conditioners. We don't have any money. I said, wow. He said, but guess what? He said, we put out a plea and said in 2 weeks we've taken in $50,000 for the air conditioners. Isn't that great? And I said, boy, that's just wonderful. He said, there's money out there. People just follow the Lord and give it. And so he cleaned up his banana pudding. He said a word about the food. And then he goes back into his chicken breast. I said, was that pudding any good? He said, oh, man, that's some of the best I ever put in my mouth. And I said, well, I won't steer you wrong. I'll lead you down the right path when it comes to food now, and I'll grow in grace and knowledge and size with you. Now listen to me carefully. If people will just listen, let God direct their path, every need you have will be met. When you surrender your life to Jesus, put your total trust in Him, He becomes your Father, He becomes your Shepherd, He becomes your teacher, and He says, I'll guide and direct you in the path that I want for you. You're maturing more, you're trusting and leaning when you want what God wants for your life more than what you want for your life. It takes a lot of us a long time to learn that. One of my favorite Bible scholars of all time was a man named Dr. John Phillips. Now I want you to know that if he told a joke in the middle of his sermon, you had to really listen hard. And a real belly laugh for him at one of his own jokes was, ha! That was it. He had glasses as thick as 6.5-ounce Coca-Cola bottle bottoms. I was reading a few weeks ago. I didn't know this. I'd been listening to him for years. He said that he and his wife had just built a new house in northern British Columbia. He said they had 3 children. He said, I worked as an accountant for some friends who owned a lumber yard. He said, we just built a new house, we just started a new church. We led a lot of people to Christ. We're discipling them. The little church was growing. In his words, he called it a fledgling church. He said, we were getting closer to where we could build a building where we could meet, have a permanent location. He said, I got a letter in the mail from something called the Moody Institute out of nowhere. And he said, the man was asking me to come to what you and I know in Chicago as Moody Bible College and Moody Bible Institute. They're asking me to come to be the business manager of that college. He said, never been to Chicago, never met this man, didn't know anything about the job. And he said, I was just in shock. He said, I didn't seek this job, so he said, I thought I'd just follow up on it. So he went in and told his wife that he had this letter, he was going to follow up on it. And so he got in touch with a man in Chicago. They talked back and forth. They corresponded back and forth. And he said, Chicago had a terrible reputation. Well, not many things have changed through the years, I don't think. He said, now, you got to understand that my wife, Jean, is from British Columbia. Her parents are there, and her mother is an invalid. And here's what she said. She said, we are not moving to Chicago, Illinois. Guys, that's just like the voice on the GPS system in your car. Now listen to me carefully. He said, I decided that I needed to at least travel to Chicago, but he said there was another man that I knew of, and Stephen Olford, who lived in London, England. So he says, I'm in the northern British Isles. He said, the guy I need to talk to get some counsel is in London, and the man wants to see me in Chicago. I don't know how I'm going to work this out. Sure enough, he got an invitation to go to Chicago. On the way back from Chicago, he went to London, England to see Stephen Olford. He said, when I was over in Chicago, he said, I was more impressed with the man who was recruiting me than I was the job position that he was offering me. He said, I like Moody Bible Institute. He said, then I made it to England, and I sat down with Stephen Olford and laid everything out. And here's what Stephen Olford said. He said, I think you need to move to Chicago. John Phillips said, what about the church I started? He said, well, if the church is not strong enough to stand without your leadership, it needs to go ahead and fail and disband. He said, you need to trust God. God's wanting you to go to Chicago. So John Phillips flew back to the northern British Isles there to see his British Columbia to see his wife, and he walked in the door after that long trip. He said, honey, we are moving to Chicago. She said, no, we're not. I'm not leaving northern British Columbia. I am home. I'm going nowhere. Now here's a smart decision on John Phillips' part. He decided not to say anything else about it. Said, my wife's a very spiritual lady. She's my partner. She gives good advice. So he said, I decided just to keep working at the lumber yard, keep the books for the lumber yard. Months and months after this, he said, every day I'd take a coffee break. And he said, sometimes I'd have a coffee break with fellow employees, and sometimes I had a coffee break with some people I was discipling in the faith that were in my young church. He said, on this particular day, I decided I'd just go home and have coffee break with my wife. He said, I opened the door and came in. She heard me. She came running down the hall, and she hugged me, and she said, honey, I got good news. He said, what is it? She said, we're moving to Chicago, to Moody Bible Institute. He said, you're kidding. She said, no. God let me know this is where we're supposed to go. And let me tell you what happened. It took them about 6 months to get all their papers to the United States government so they could move to the United States. He said, we got a young pastor to take over for me in the little new church. And he said, I want you to know it's just flourished. That's been a beautiful thing in British Columbia. He said, I made it to Moody Bible Institute. And he said, I was the business manager for 6 months. And the man that hired me came in and said, we want to put you in charge of all course development for the whole college. Now this is an accountant. Are y'all with me here? And so he said, well, okay. He said, and that helped me with my writing skills. And then he said, then Moody asked me if I would have my own show on the Moody radio channel. And he said, then they asked me if I'd write articles every month. Some of you remember the magazine Moody Monthly. And he said, then they asked me to teach in the evening at Moody Bible Institute. And then he said, God laid it on my heart to write some books. And he said, Moody Press published my first 8 books that I wrote. He said, churches started asking me to come and preach. And he said, that's where I worked on my preaching skills. He said, I had access to a fine library, a great staff. He said, the Lord directed our path. And he said, my wife found fulfillment in Chicago with some wonderful new friends. And then he said, I involved her in my work and let her proof and make corrections in all the books I was writing. He said she gave me a female perspective on all my books. Listen to me carefully. In all your ways, what? Trust in the Lord with what? All your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. When we enthrone God and His laws on our heart, our paths are directed with ordinary decisions and in moments of crisis we encounter. Question: do you trust Him? Stand right where you are. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed here and in the Family Life Center.